Alright, I just have to make sure my levels are okay, because on the other computer they come in really hot when I switch over to this one, so I think they're okay. This is MSO News Sports, and I'm just checking the meter here, make sure I don't hit the red line too often, and I am in the red quite a bit there. There we go. Okay, so I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, Bill Newell, anchoring everything in terms of the website, talking with coaches and getting news stories and filling it up for us. And we have, I want to thank people who have been checking in so much. Tim, our traffic is off the charts. We're doing so well, and it's great to have so many people listening to the coaches and commenting on it. So really appreciate that. Tonight it's kind of a subdued show in terms of the number of participants. We're going to have Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, on in just a little while. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk with Mike Grenier, probably start off with Celtics and go from there. So, Mr. Kearns, how you doing?
I am well, Mr. Moore, as they say.
What's on your mind sports-wise?
That had to be one of those boring football games to watch yesterday. It was absolutely abysmal. Two teams couldn't get out of their own way. It's luckily the Pats defense came to play, because the offense, thank God for Nick Folk, who still continues to kick at an amazingly efficient level for them and allows them to put points on the board, as the offense can't seem to find their way across the goal line. So it just kind of makes you wonder, how long is Mac Jones' job good for? It's a sad thing to say, because he came in with such promise. He played so well last year, and all of a sudden the team is going nowhere under his leadership on the field. He's not making passes. He seems slow to react, slow to get rid of the ball. And I'm sure I was the only one thinking yesterday, how much longer till we see the kid? And his gunslinging move the ball around the field.
Well,
it's going to be an interesting second half of the season. The Bruins and the Celtics are playing really well. Tom Brady continues to play his
what a game team. What a finish last night, huh? Jeez.
I turned it off when they turned it over on down to the Rams. I went, oh, well, this is over.
40 seconds.
And I go in the computer last night, and I go, yep, you've got to be kidding me.
40 seconds, he's at their own 45-yard line, no timeouts left. Bing, 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 right down the field. Little 15-yard outs. Everybody caught the – what I was impressed with about Brady yesterday, he was throwing the ball as well as he ever has, and receivers were dropping it like crazy, okay? But instead of getting all, girly about it, little baby girly-ish, and crying like a baby, he kept doing it, Tim. He just kept firing the ball right into between the numbers. He just stayed with it. And then in the end, on the last drive, everybody caught the ball. And it seems to me like Brady crossed a threshold there. Well, he did, 100,000 yards passing. Good God.
Yeah. They talked to Belichick. He goes, I don't even know how many miles it is. And it's something like 58.6 miles he's thrown for.
Well, the thing is, I remember when Drew Brees broke the record, remember they stopped the game, they had his family on the field, and he's 15,000 yards behind Brady now.
No.
15,000. Jeez.
Well, you gotta look at it this way. The only one who could possibly catch him is Mahomes, and I don't think he's going to play 22 years. And they gave these ridiculous numbers that he was going to have to put up in order to catch Brady and do what he has done. So there's very little likelihood. Plus, I saw it today, he's playing next year. His intention now, that Giselle's out of the way, he's going to be able to play next year, his mind at ease, and see where it goes.
Well, he looked like Tom Brady yesterday, I'll tell you. At least in the fourth quarter. Good Lord. But again, they were dropping the balls all over the place, and instead of, you know, whining about it, instead of getting all upset, he just kept putting the ball right on the money, and that was really something. Tim, you mentioned...
That's been the trademark of Tom Brady throughout his 22-year career, which is so amazing to say, is that, you know, he never gave up on anything. He just kept putting the ball out there. Catch the ball.
Yep.
And, you know, with Belichick, he knew if you didn't catch it, you were going to come off the field, and Bill was going to find somebody else who could catch the ball. And Brady believes in his receivers. And I'm sure he had a little word for him on the sideline. Catch the ball. Relax. Catch the ball. We'll win this. Because that's what he does.
Yeah, that was really something. I have to editorialize for a minute here. You mentioned the Bruins, and I have never been more disappointed or angry at what transpired Friday into today. And I'm sure you're aware of it, Tim. This Mitchell Miller thing, this kid who was accused of bullying a developmentally delayed young man. Plus, I don't even call it bullying. It's way worse than bullying. That wasn't bullying what he did. Allegedly at age 14. And 6 years later, you know, he gets this contract from the Bruins without their fully vetting it. And I don't know this kid, but I do know of people like him. And a story that just resonates with me is one time, many years ago now, I had a young man in class who was a senior in high school. And as you know, my son has Down syndrome, and this kid loved to sling the word retard around. He loved to use that word and sling it around. And it happened from time to time back then because it was a familiar phrase in these parts, Tim. And it wasn't, people didn't use it to, they just slung it around haphazardly. And it was a phrase to mean, you know, that's stupid, that's silly, whatever. It wasn't meant as a derogatory thing. However, I was always offended by it because of my son and how, you know, Ricky, and how delicate, not delicate, but how effusive he is in being happy, and he's such a good influence and so on. And so when that word was brought up in my classes, I would always have to just put the chalk down, turn around, and talk to the kids. And my message was, I know you don't mean anything by it, but it does hurt me. I don't like it. I'm uncomfortable with it. And if you told me I was saying some kind of language about your parents, your brother, your sister, whatever, that I might have used a word inadvertently, casually, but caustically, and you told me about it, I would never do it again. And I would phrase it in that manner with my kids. And you know, Tim, every single time it came up, it never came up again, except for this one senior. And when I got through explaining it, you know what he said? That's blank. He said it right out loud. That's blank. Now, move forward a few years later. I need some work done on my house or whatever it was. Company pulls up, and this guy gets out of the truck. And I said, you know what? We don't want you. We don't need you. I'm not having you at my house. And I called the owner, and I said, the job is canceled. We don't want it. Just because, and this was like about the same time frame. It was about a six-year gap. And the kid may have gotten better. He may have gotten more sensitive. He may have understood. I don't know. But I didn't care. I didn't want him near me or my son. And I can't tell you how emotional that is. Certainly not rational on my part, but it's emotional. And I just wish that the school that this kid was in with this hockey player, the parents of the perpetrator, administrators, someone could have or should have stepped in on that. And it just makes me so angry that young man was so abused.
Yeah, Kim Neely was, walking it all back today, saying, you know, really disappointed. We didn't vet it properly. We should have contacted that young man's family. And they've dropped the signing and everything. And, you know, how bad it was, Bettman got involved. The commissioner of the league and said that there's no way this kid's playing, you know, probably ever in the NHL.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have to go somewhere else to play.
Well, I'm extremely disappointed in Cam Neely and in and Bob Sweeney, and I have been for a long time, by the way. This isn't the first thing. But I am really proud of the way that the community has risen up. And, you know, that no one's sending this kid to prison. The hockey player, Mitchell, whatever his name is, Miller. They're not saying, you should go to hell or anything like that. They're just saying, okay, we just don't want you in our organization. And, I'm glad that the Bruins, fan base, and for that matter, the media as well stepped in and said, this is not who we are. You know, as a hockey organization, or what we want for a hockey organization. The kid may be rehabilitated. He may be, you know, the next coming of Wayne Gretzky. And if that's okay, that's okay. But I hope the Bruins do reach out to the young man's family who the young man who was abused. And I hope they are able to make a connection with that and sort of right the wrong that they sort of inadvertently or maybe, you know, committed otherwise.
Well, the team itself spoke up and made it known that they didn't want him on the team.
That's true.
So, you know, you add the voices of the players who saw the wrongness of this kid's actions, and obviously, I don't know if he was found guilty or not. We have to go back to the NHL. I'll find that out because they have a story online. And, you know, the Neely was most apologetic and the failure to vet properly, to go deep, to look deeper. So at least, you know, they didn't just march straight ahead and as word started coming about that, they just simply ignored the situation and went ahead, signed the kid, put him in the organization, because they were going to send him to Providence for some seasoning, and then probably bring him up.
Well, the other thing is, and this would be the end of it for me, why his own parents, the perpetrator, Miller, is that his name? Why his own parents didn't get involved with this at one point? I just don't understand. As educators, Tim, we just... God, we steer away from that stuff, and if you see it, God, you report it. My Lord, just terrible. Anyway, I had to get that off my chest because the thing is that years later, I saw this guy in my class, the former student in my class, and I just didn't want him anywhere near me or my family, so.
Oh, yeah. McMillan was convicted along with one of his high school buddies, middle school, and this is when they were in middle school.
That was only 6 years ago for this kid. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, assault and bullying. It began in the second grade.
Yeah, and then everybody knows the story, and that's beyond bullying. Okay, that's beyond bullying. It is assault and battery, and it's just grotesque. Anyway, let's turn. We're gonna have Nick Kukrun here. We're gonna raise the level of, a little bit of get that cloud out of here and talk some sports. There's so much going on right now. Bill and I and Tim have been focusing on football, the playoffs in particular this last week, and we have a lot of interviews coming up again this week. There are a couple up there right now with the St. John's Prep football coach and the Amesbury football coach. But we're going to talk Cape Ann sports with Nick Kukrun in just a second here. So stay with us. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer Bill Proposky, and our Mr. Everything is Bill Newell. We'll be right back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
We are back with Nick Kukrun, one of the Nicks of Nick and Nick, the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. It is now part of MSO, we're so proud to say, and we're so glad to have them part of MSO. And they're heard generally dropping on Thursdays here, I believe. Nick, do I have that right? You're usually on Thursdays?
Yes, Thursdays. Yeah, we love being a part of it. Like the podcast world, no rigid deadlines. You know, if we got a great interview going, we can let it go as long as it needs to now.
That's the great thing. Or if it's getting boring, you can cut it off to it.
Exactly.
That's the beauty of the internet. We found, Bill and I and Tim, we found that out. It's just so cool because you, my old English teacher used to say, we used to ask him, you raise your hand. Well, she'd say, you know, you got to do an essay. And we'd say, well, how long does it have to be? And she would always say, it has to be long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to be interesting. And that's just perfect for the internet. Nick, I want to bring you in here with Tim, and I want to start with, we've been covering football a lot, and I want to sort of steer away from that and pick up the other sports, particularly on Cape Ann. And I don't know where you want to start. I know Tim will probably ask you about field hockey, so let's start somewhere else first.
I was going to say, that's probably Cape Ann's biggest contenders, you know, Manchester Essex and Gloucester. Gloucester's the 3 seed in Division 3, and, you know, they just knocked off Wilmington 4-1 the other night. They're playing Medfield Wednesday night, and then Manchester Essex, the 2 seed in Division 4. They knocked off Northbridge 5-0 in their first round game. They got Blackstone Valley visiting Manchester on Wednesday. So two opponents I'm not all too familiar with, but I mean, you get into that second round, everyone's for real now.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Yeah.
Hey, Tim.
You know, certainly the first round opponents, you figure, you know, the locals are going to get through those, but then you gotta play those teams from the central part of the state. And, they're just always tough teams to play against.
Yeah, absolutely. And they don't know much about them either. And yeah, usually the good thing about this is that I like, you know, the travel can be tough, but there's no such thing as like a good or bad draw anymore. Your seed is your draw. And I mean, you know, you get, there's no easy roads anymore. You know, you don't really see a ton of, you know, 14 versus a 3, and the records are skewed, but that doesn't mean the team's, you know, any worse. So you got some, you know, evenly matched teams pretty much going on. 16 teams left. I feel like the quarterfinals is definitely anyone's game, but, the second round's pretty close. Anybody can be beaten in that round.
You know, I looked at the football, pairings, and the, brackets, and that's what Bill and I have been concentrating on. And I believe, who was telling me this morning? Oh, the Amesbury football coach, Colin McQueen, his dad is a math teacher, and he runs the numbers. And he was saying that as far as they could tell, that across the 8 divisions, there was one upset, meaning one outside the top 8 who sneaked in. I think it might have been Everett. And Everett doesn't sneak in.
They were an 11 seed, so yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, they do. They work. And I always tell people, because, you know, I think the coaches, they see them when they first come out. And when they first come out, they're usually a little out of whack. And, you know, you can't really explain sometimes why one team jumped 1 week or one team fell 1 week. But the end product has been pretty spot on.
Yo, Tim.
Oh, Tim, what you got?
Letting Nick, you know, respond, Rick. Come on, will you?
What's that?
Pressure on me.
No, there's a delay here. It sounds like it's a big gap, but I think you're just hearing the end of it when I'm still in the gap. So that's we'll just wait. We'll be more patient when it happens.
Oh, thank you for your patience. Lauren has done such an outstanding job along with her dad, who could coach probably any sport in the
he pretty much does.
You know, but they have amassed a tremendous level of success. And Lauren was in one of the first classes that I taught when I came to Gloucester in the spring of '96, and she was a star athlete then and a great student, and she has just continued to be a star in her coaching career.
Oh yeah, big time. I mean, they got such a, you know, culture with that program. I mean, they just reload, you know, year after year. I mean, last year was, you know, admittedly a little tougher for them than usual. You know, they were coming off that 7-on-7 COVID year, breaking in a lot of new players that would have gotten a chance to play if it was 11-on-11, but, you know, didn't because they took 4 players off of the field at a time. So they bounced right back this year. 15-1-3 right now. You know, they were runners up only to undefeated Masco in the Northeastern Conference. And I mean, and they're not going anywhere. They're most, the core of their team is juniors. I mean, they got some great senior leaders and some of their star players, but, I mean, they're a junior laden team. So they're going to be, right back in the spot next year. They just reload year after year, about as consistent a commodity as it gets in Gloucester.
Let's look at some of the other sports, Nick, and I want to ask you first of all about Gloucester soccer.
Yeah, they lost a heartbreaker on Sunday, 1-0 to Norton in the first round. It was a 19-14 game, so it was fairly evenly matched, but Gloucester really controlled the game. They hit the post four times and lost 1-0. It was one of the more improbable heartbreaking losses I'd seen, and I felt bad for them after, because they really did control that game for much of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, right now, Matt Manning Field and Lynn Rockport boys soccer is getting set to play Kip Academy. That's a round of 32 Division 5 games, so it's, which should be interesting. Rockport's so battle-tested out of the Cal, and they're not, their record isn't as good as Kip's. Their seed's not as high as Rockport's, the 19 seed, but I don't think Kip's going to throw anything at them that they haven't already seen before. So this should be, I'm expecting a really tight one here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Kip Academy has performed, I think, unexpectedly well in terms of its athletic programs.
They're tough out in every sport. You know, Rockport and Manchester Essex seem to, you know, they've had, Manchester Essex football has a really nice rivalry with them. That, those two teams, it's a great take every time they play. And yeah, they're right there. They're in the mix in those lower divisions every year. So I see them a bunch with Rockport and Manchester Essex, and they're formidable in everything.
How about consolation football, Nick? Gloucester doing okay.
Yeah, they look pretty good this week, against Essex Tech. They got a real tough test coming up Thursday at Triton. Triton is, they were a playoff team. They got bounced by Appanequit last week, so that'll be a tall task for them. But a good chance to, you know, for them to show how much they've improved, because I think they have actually improved. I know it was one of the lower points of their season was that Salem loss, but I thought in the second half of that game they really started to figure things out and found their identity, and they've kind of kept that momentum going. They've won three out of their last four now. I know a little too late to get into the playoffs, but it'd be real important to finish, you know, this season with some momentum.
Yeah, I think, you know, Dan would definitely agree with that assessment, especially heading into next year. You're looking for bodies. You're looking mm-hmm. for some new talent. You're looking for a renewed commitment to the program. And certainly ending this season as strongly as possible would go a long way to making that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this season I think was kind of a good start for that, you know, renewal to the program, kind of building that, that culture back up. And, you know, it wasn't the start that they wanted to get, but they do, you know, have something to salvage here. That's why I like, you know, if you're a team that didn't qualify for the playoffs, I think the consolation round is a good thing. And I think the product, you know, you get two teams that do have something to play for. They want to, you know, finish strong, as opposed to, you know, the problem with the consolation round is a team that's been eliminated from the playoffs and has to play again. That's a totally different story. But if you were a non-qualifier, those games are still big games.
Yeah, and scrappy. It's a scrappy team. I know Mark Betancourt praised the kids, even though, you know, he had a 30-point win over Gloucester. But I just want to mention, I want you to mention one more thing, Nick, and that is Don Riley, because Tim alluded to him without naming. I know everybody knows that Lauren's dad is Don Riley, but he's sort of like Mark Betancourt. You said he could coach everything and does. Mark Betancourt, I don't think Mark sleeps. He coaches.
No, I don't think he does either.
He coaches like 10 different sports every season.
And that's not just high school. I mean,
that's right.
You know, he was the Peabody West Little League coach. He coaches some of his, you know, his daughter's softball team. So he's all over the place. And I mean, all of his teams are well coached too, you know, no matter what season it is.
Well, I think just finish the thought that what he's done with that Peabody program, getting it back to its elite level, is really quite a thing to see. He's done a fantastic job.
Yeah, he absolutely has. I mean, I know, you know, it wasn't too long ago when Peabody was kind of the doormat of the NEC. I mean, winless season they had one year. You know, they had a season where they had, you know, they had a coaching change in the middle of the season, and he came in and just kind of stabilized, you know, everything for them. And you see this year, I mean, they had a great season. I know it was disappointing, and they ran into a tough Bishop Feehan team in the first round, but yeah, he did. He put Peabody, football back to prominence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nick, Would you give him any grief?
About what?
Anything.
No.
Tim, he lost the other night, and you know how scared I was to go interview him?
Oh, I'll tell you, when I went up to them, no matter what the sport, just even baseball games, if they lost, I'm like, okay, how do I approach this without getting my head screwed?
I tell you what, could...
His baseball team has had that. O'Malley Fields has not been kind to them in recent years. He's always been a fair, and he always has a very level-headed, feel after even after a loss. I will say,
yeah, he really does. But just knowing him, you're going like, oh man, I could get really hurt doing this. You know, I'm going to break this really gently.
Yeah, and he's been nothing but gracious to us, and we really appreciate it. And the thing is, they were up against it against Bishop Feehan. I mean, these guys, they had 290-pound linemen who were athletes, you know, and so he, you know, he was quick to point that out and praise his kids. So I just wanted to mention what a great job Betancourt and that family does, just like the Riley family in Gloucester. And I know every community's got one of those, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everywhere.
Somebody.
All right. We'll talk to you later, Nick. And what are you doing tonight? It's Kip and Rockport at Manning?
Kip and Rockport. They're about 5-10 minutes away from getting going here.
All right. You got a late night tonight. Hey, Nick, thank you so much. And we'll be listening later on in the week.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Nick. Take care. All right, that's Nick Kukuru of one of the Nick and Nicks. There's Dominic Nicastro and Nick Kukuru of the Nick and Nicks. Nicks and Nicks. No, Nick and Nick. There you go. North Shore Sports Desk and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk here on MSO News Sports. That show usually drops during Thursdays. So he's right. It's great, this format. We can do, we can come and go as we please. So, all right, let's take a break. We're going to come back and talk some basketball and other stuff with Mike Renier. As we continue here on North Shore Sports Night, we will press this button and hope for the best.
All right, Rick, I got to step aside for a moment.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSONewsSports.com is connecting you to the North Shore. A real local news and sports podcast giving you updates from around Essex County. Spotlight feature interviews with area newsmakers. The North Shore Today Post features community updates and local photos and useful links. This is the place to hear and see positive local coverage, making the connections that support the North Shore community.
Your body.
All right, sorry about that. Ghost in the machine here, and I'm the ghost in the machine. Anyway, Mike Grenier is here with us, and Tim is here with us. Tim Kearns, Mike Grenier. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Newell, of course, taking care of business back in headquarters there. Mike, welcome back. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing well. We're doing well. It's getting interesting with the Celtics and the entire NBA here because we're about 9 or 10 games in. Long way to go, but some trends are starting to develop.
All right, I'm going to start with...
What are those trends that you see?
I'm sorry, with Tim, I didn't hear you.
What are the trends that you see beginning to...
Well, we're seeing, I think, Tim, and you can comment on this, and Rick, too, but we're seeing the Celtics being the opposite personality, the basketball personality on the court. They're the opposite of what they were a year ago. They are giving up almost the most points per game, almost the most points per game of any team in the NBA. In other words, last year they prided themselves on defense, and they were third or fourth ranked defense in the entire NBA. This year, they're giving up more points than everybody except the Pistons. I mean, the real bad teams. We're talking the Pistons, the Pacers, and then it's really the Celtics and the Atlanta Hawks who are giving up 115.3 points per game. On the other hand, Tim, they have the highest scoring offense in the entire NBA. They're racking up points like crazy. They're the number one offense in the entire league.
I know, you know, I noticed that as I was looking through the South Bend. They're averaging 118 points a game.
Right, right.
But, you know, scoring that many, you can afford to give up a lot. But again, we've talked about it before, you don't want to get into that kind of bad habit of allowing the opposition a whole lot of points because there are nights that you're going to be a little chillier than others.
Oh, there's no question, Terry. I think what we saw the other night against the Knicks, I think it was, they had 27 three-pointers, a franchise high in team history, 27 three-pointers, and they shot like 27 for 55, or almost like 50% basically on threes, which is ridiculous when you're making that many, 27 in one game, a franchise high. Like you said, there's a lot of nights that you're going to be a lot chillier than that. And on those nights, you have to bank on your defense. And right now, the bank is on empty, you know?
I think, from my perspective, what do you call it, the eye test, the most, aside from the big two, the most energy infused into that lineup, both sides, on both ends of the court, has been Malcolm Brogdon. Do you think
no doubt.
Do you think he's going to worm his way into the starting lineup?
Yeah, I think I mentioned a week ago, Rick. I thought he merits being in the starting lineup, maybe over Derek White. That means you still have Marcus Smart in there, and you have Horford, and you have Brown and Tatum. But I think the other part of a coach's philosophy or a team's philosophy is you want to bring an energy guy who is also a prolific scorer, which Brogdon has been. He's averaging 14.9 points per game, 15 a game, basically, coming off the bench while not taking a whole lot of shots. And the ball moves better when he's out there. There's no question in my mind the ball moves from side to side and from inside to outside when Malcolm Brogdon's in there. And he personally likes to penetrate and make the easier shot than other guys who are taking the threes. So you can argue it both ways. It's not, I mean, obviously we go back to the days of Red Auerbach, and even though Havlicek had the ability, John Havlicek had the ability to be a starter, they brought him in as a spark, as a sixth man. He was like the sixth man of the year for a few years until he became a bona fide starter. So you can make the same argument that maybe Brogdon will be more effective coming off the bench as a spark while opposing teams are getting a little tired with their starting lineup. He comes in and provides scoring and defense and penetration and passing. So, you know, he can do that both as a starter and as a reliever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, you know, it's weird. My wife was asking me about him the other night. I'm going, okay, so this guy's made an impression.
Right. I mean, you know, you're right. Go ahead, Tim. Keep going.
You know, we've talked about so many of these points before. It's what makes a team viable in the long term throughout the season. it makes it a viable choice going deep into the playoffs and
yes.
and possibly, you know, winning the whole thing. These are the guys that you've got to have in your lineup, on your yep. bench, that come in and give you minutes, they give you points, they give you defense, they give you quality contributions on a nightly basis. You yep. really see them have a string of bad nights, of no contribution, of bad play, of a lot of mental mistakes. They just don't. They're the kind of solid citizens that you need to keep you in the thick of it throughout a long season.
Yep, and Tim, the other thing I think I like about him is that, whereas you still see Jason Tatum get upset with the officiating or he gets emotional on the court, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, he gets emotional. Jaylen Brown gets a little bit emotional. You know, obviously Marcus Smart can get very emotional. Malcolm Brogdon is a complete poker face, whether he misses a shot or makes a shot or
yeah.
call for a foul or draws a foul. I love that sort of equal person, you know, sort of that calm demeanor that he brings to the court. And I think that's an asset because, I mean, I've seen him speak post-game and at halftime, and he certainly cares, and he wants to contribute, but he plays with a certain, you know, attitude of, you know, whatever happens, happens, and he's going to make the best of it, but he's not going to let the emotion of the game get to him because he knows it could be a 100-game season counting the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, or 105 games, whatever it may be, when you go to the finals.
The other guy who's been eye-popping in my mind is Sam Hauser.
Agree. Tim, what do you think of him so far?
He's a guy that sort of come out of the blue.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the expectation was when they came out of the starting blocks, but I think he's a player who simply has, this is my role. This is what they want me to do. So I'm going to go out there and do it. And he doesn't try to do too much. He just plays within himself, within the flow of the game. And for a lot of guys, that produces their best results.
Yep. And he had an eye-popping game the other night, I thought, 17 points. And for the season, although it's a young season, he's taken enough threes, I mean, to have a little bit of a sample size. He's hitting almost 55% of his threes. I mean, is that sustainable? No. But it shows you that he's a tremendous three-point shooter if you leave him alone. And I don't think opposing defenses know about him yet. It's sort of like when Duncan Robinson, the great shooter for the Miami Heat, who with the pure ability to shoot threes, got himself like a 5-year contract for about $80 or $90 million. He kind of reminds me of Duncan Robinson and set the fact that if you leave him alone, he's going to kill you with a three-pointer, mm-hmm. Hauser. So valuable weapon off the bench.
Yeah, and you know, and we know what that means is teams see guys like him come in. Now you've got to, you know, what he can do, and if he starts with making a couple of shots, now they start to swing their defense towards him. And somebody else is going to be open.
No question. No question. And, you know, the other guy who's been going crazy with the threes, and we have to give him credit so far, is Grant Williams. He's a guy who started his NBA career 0 for 25 on three-pointers in his rookie year. And he certainly has become a much improved player. And he's shooting like 53 or 54% on threes, which is, you know, again, that's not going to continue for 82 games. But it shows you that he's worked on his three-point development even more in the off season, and it's a legitimate part of his arsenal. He also is very strong at taking it to the basket, and you know, so he's up there and playing very well. And you know, Rick, I guess, you know, I mentioned the defense, and Tim, you probably agree they're giving up too many points. 115.3 is their average, 115.3. So basically, they're only winning their games by 3 or 4 points per game on average. All right. So, you know, you have close games like that, you're going to lose some of them. But they're 6-3, and I think some of the defensive problems will be solved, and they should be solved, when Robert Williams comes back from injury. Now, Robert Williams, it seems to be an uptick in good news about him. He's been doing some, I guess he's been dunking at practice, and he's been doing some good things at practice. No one knows how far away he is from being activated and being put in the lineup. But you'd hope that defensively they're going to make some strides when he's in the lineup and he presents, because he can block shots, he can close out on three-pointers, and they're just a much better defensive team when he's on the court.
Who's the other kid who comes into the lineup and he'll stand at the rim? The guys are outside shooting three-pointers, and he'll stand at the rim and put his arms up, and he changes the direction of the shot. Who's
you're talking about Luke Kornet.
Kornet, yes. I've never seen anything like that. It's weird.
Right. You know, it's kind of an odd thing. But if that's one of his assets, it's great, because he's not, at 7'2", he's kind of an awkward guy who's not going to score a lot of points. He doesn't get up off the ground. His center of his gravity is pretty quick. He comes down pretty quickly because he's just not a great jumper or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if he gives him the occasional, he can shoot the three, actually. He gives him an occasional inside basket. If he gives Horford some time off, 10, 12, 13, 14 minutes a game, that's a plus for the Celtics. The Celtics know, and I think Luke Kornet knows, that he can only do a few things. He knows his limitations, mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm saying. So he's not going to try to do extra things that will hurt the team. So he's a good guy to have as a ninth or tenth man on the team.
Yeah, you know, the one time I did see him early in the year, I'm like, okay, what is this guy gonna do? Like Hank Finkel.
Sure, exactly. You know, that's a great name to bring up.
You know, Hank had a role, very limited, but he became a mainstay of those teams in the early 70s. When you needed a minute or two, and came in and put up a very tall body.
And you know what, and you're right, Terry, you know what's the great thing about those guys, the ones who, they know what their limitations are physically, and they go all out, they become fan favorites, right, Rick? They
become
fans. Hank Finkel was a fan favorite. Luke Kornet, I think, has become a fan favorite. Taco Fall was a fan favorite, although I think, you know, a lot of people knew that in the long run, he probably wasn't going to make it. He's just not good enough, you know,
yeah.
And so...
Yeah.
But those guys, when they work at it, become fan favorites.
Scalabrini worked the podcast job.
Yep, and you know, they come in, they play hard, they pick up the fans' energy, and sometimes they contribute in a real positive way. So that's what Luke Kornet can do. And of course, you know, Rick, I know you like to bring up the big two, and they continue to play well. You know, obviously.
Well, we've gone 15 or 20 minutes without talking about them, so let's do talk
sure.
about them, sure.
Tatum averaging 31 a game, 30.3, I believe it is. And Jaylen Brown's averaging like 25 points a game. So, again, if you're an opposing defense, you're in for a lot of work trying to guard those two, because they can do it from inside, they can do it from outside. And they're both off to like sort of all-star caliber starts after nine games. So,
what do you think about all the foul shots that Tatum is generating now?
Oh my God! Obviously, he had 20 foul shots in one game. I thought of James Harden right away, because Harden gets those games, not so much now because he's older and he's lost his edge. He's not the player he was. But obviously, even 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, it would be infuriating as a fan on the opposite team to watch him go to the foul line 15, 16 times, per game almost, or two or three games in a row, 15 shots, 15 fouls. Tatum getting 20 in one game I thought was a phenomenal thing, and it leads you to think, okay, why doesn't he do that more often? And I think one of the reasons maybe he doesn't is that when you're taking into the basket these days against these guys, you're getting crushed a lot of times. You're going to the foul line, but physically, it takes a toll. So I think you got to play it smart. Some nights, the lane is going to be there for you to drive, and you're going to draw some fouls. And other nights, well, you know, you got some big man who's going to punish you physically. So it might be better if Embiid is under there fouling you. It's a little different than some other guy fouling you. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If you follow my my path here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think any other team in the league has two young players the caliber of Tatum and Brown that can just go out there on a nightly basis and take over a game and play off one another as effectively as those two do.
Yep. Yeah, I completely agree. That's why I mentioned, I think it's for opposing defense, they have to scheme, they have to game plan for them, and it's a tough game plan for an opposing team when those. And of course, then you're talking about Horford, a veteran in that starting lineup, still effective. And of course, Marcus Smart, who'll do anything to win offensively and defensively. And we mentioned Malcolm Brogdon and all that stuff. And Rick, they're 6-3. Not bad. They play in a really good Memphis Grizzlies team tonight in a 9 p.m. game. And, what makes me, I can't say nervous yet. It's too early. The Milwaukee Bucks are 9-0.
Well, yeah.
Despite the fact that Giannis has sat out one or two games. Chris Middleton, an all-star player, has missed all 9 games because he's still recovering from an injury that he sustained before the playoffs last year. And Pat Connaughton, who's a key rotation player off the bench, hasn't come back from his injury. He's due back in a couple weeks. So when they get a full-strength team, how good are they going to be? 9-0 and marching along, and we mentioned the Cleveland Cavaliers a couple weeks ago and last week, Rick, right there. They've only lost one game. So it's going to be very interesting at the top of the Eastern Conference. Celtics are going to have to be strong and keep winning games to get a high seed in the playoffs.
And everybody has a letdown now and then. I want to ask you, changing the subject just a little bit here, what's the latest on Kyrie?
The latest on Kyrie is that he's toxic and but the Nets probably badly want to get rid of him. There's been talk that he would go to the Lakers next year. Now, come on, the Lakers are like 2-7, and struggling as it is, would they want him in the clubhouse, in the locker room? Are you kidding me? I think the options for Kyrie limited, very limited. Kyrie Irving, because he's made this half-hearted apology because of the Jewish hate link that he put on his social media platform, and it rings hollow, and it is hollow because he has a history of being hollow in everything he does. Right now, his career reputation is based on making a winning shot in the NBA Finals, and other than that, really, when you think about it, he's a very good offensive player, but defensively, whether he's with the Celtics or any other team, what I've noticed anyway, Tim, and maybe you've noticed it too, and Rick and Tim, he's one of the weakest defensive players in the entire league. You can score on him any time and every time. And, you know, I would welcome Kyrie Irving to play against Malcolm Brogdon or Tatum or even Marcus Smart because he's a horrible defensive player.
Well, you know, he's two steps towards the offensive zone, even when he's playing defense. He's looking the break. He has no concentration on defending anyone. Any one particular person because he's looking to break out. And a good offensive team knows that, and they exploit him. The easiest thing to do with him is you just pick and roll him all night long.
Yep. And Rick, you mentioned as soon as he left, though he's serving suspension, the Nets, they didn't have Ben Simmons the next game either because who knows what he does from game to game. He's completely lost. They won by 42 points. They beat the Washington Wizards, who took their worst home loss in team history. They lost by 42. The Nets didn't have Kyrie. They didn't have Ben Simmons, but they did have Durant and guys who maybe wanted to play as a team. When Kyrie is on the floor or off the floor, there is so much drama. MGM Studios needs to come cover Kyrie Irving because there's so much drama. Maybe they should sign him for a few movies.
Do you think that the social awareness, the civic awareness, that someone like Kyrie is either not familiar with or overly familiar with, and he's such a magnet, he's such a celebrity, do you think that... that is bringing about some kind of an education to these young professional athletes, not just in basketball, but also in the other sports, where what they say, what they do, is it's out there, and they may think very highly of themselves. They've got teammates who are tempering it down and tamping it down, saying, listen, we have a bigger commitment than just shooting our mouths off and thinking we're superstars, if you get what I'm trying to say.
I do get that, and I think that Kyrie has lost sight of that. The fact that he has teammates who who care more than he does about winning and about performing as a team. And but Kyrie marches to the beat of his own drummer, and he's all about Kyrie. And you know, and you're right, the message gets out there, and it's the wrong message, and it's picked up by a lot of people, especially young people. And it's sort of like, you know, it's akin basically to what the Bruins have done last two or three days. Basically denying, saying that they didn't have enough information on a guy they signed who was a bully, okay? And then picking up the flag and saying, oh, we didn't have enough information about him. Of course they had enough information about him. They were just hoping to sneak him onto the roster and develop him as a player and hope that everyone forgot that he was a bully. But there was so much blowback against the Bruins, they had to drop the guy.
I'd be even more disappointed if that was the case, that they were trying to sneak this guy by despite knowing what he did, especially in light of, you know, today's media and today's kickback towards people
right.
with that kind of history. And, it was 6 years ago. He was 14 years old. Was he, given the opportunity to speak out on what he had done, you know? But I think a lot of people just don't have the toleration to put up with that kind of action without some kind of, I guess, atonement. But I think it's a kickback to it all the time. You know, you did wrong, and see you later.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, because of social media, more people were aware of it, and certainly, I think it was like the mother of the boy who got bullied said it was happened for years and years. It was just not an isolated incident. I do give the Bruins players credit for stepping up and basically saying this is a good move, getting rid of him. No one is really sticking up for this kid. He's only 20 years old. However, I mean, he has a long history of bullying, so therefore, Rick, I'm sorry to get off the topic here, but I just, you know, we mentioned Kyrie and getting noticed by people on the outside. Well, you know, it's the Bruins just did the same thing. But, you know, getting back to basketball, I'm just glad that Kyrie Irving is not part of the Celtics culture
anymore. And
it's a different culture altogether when you have a Kyrie Irving on any team.
And it's not off topic, Mike, because we have a lot of, you know, we cover a lot of high school stuff and kids. And Tim and I mean, we're educators, Bill Newell. And it is certainly not off topic because sports is a great outlet for us. And as you and I have discussed many times,
yes,
there's still the little kid inside of us. And that's why we're still doing this. And it also, the other thing I've noticed is what's really cool about high school sports is that it makes the entire geographical area of the North Shore and maybe Eastern Massachusetts into a backyard neighborhood.
Yep. And you know, it's so funny because even though I'm a retired old man, I was out at Merrimack College for a night game last week in Division I college women's soccer, because Morgan Bovati, who played at Maskinomen, was a grade 3-4 star, is a scholarship athlete at Sacred Heart University. And they played Merrimack in a conference semifinals, and the next game was a berth in the NCAA tournament. Morgan Bovati, leading scorer for that team, and she scored the winning goal on the road against Merrimack College the other night and put him in a position to go to the NCAA tournament, which they lost that game yesterday in penalty kicks. But, you know, it just brings me back to those days of covering those high school games, because I saw Morgan Bovati hit 11 three-pointers in a game for Maskinomen when she was a freshman.
Yeah.
So that little kid inside me still is there, just as it is with you guys. So, yeah, it's all good when we're seeing stuff like that still happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So meanwhile, the Celtics, you know, Memphis Grizzlies tonight, certainly another very difficult opponent on the road. They're to me, they're the most fun team to watch. Ja Morant is an incredibly gifted point guard, and he can leap about 18 feet. So it'll be interesting to see if the Celtics can clamp down on defense against him.
Tim, final thoughts for Mike?
Mike, I wanted to mention this earlier, but I know you do such an excellent job, but stepping into Gary's time slot at 7:30. I hope you're aware of the tremendous expectations that Rick and I have for you.
That's right.
My God, really? You're right. And I wouldn't know anything about a a putt or the four iron or anything like that. So it's going to have to be some other subject matters that we discuss, right?
Absolutely. And I got to tell you guys, going back to Peabody football for 1 second the other night, when Bishop Feehan just manhandled Peabody, Bishop Feehan's got guys like, as I was saying, 290, 300, and they're athletes. And two of them, one of them is named Bruski, another one is named Mankins. You get where I'm going?
Oh, yes.
And and that's just those. I didn't know that. I didn't know Logan Mankins had stayed in the area. So that's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's cool to see these guys around. I actually went to the Patriots game yesterday. It was a lot of fun. I actually had people behind me thinking that I actually knew Giselle. I told them that I knew Giselle. That's how I came up with great seats yesterday. They actually believed me. My wife was laughing, and I said, "Eileen, they believe me." And their follow up questions confirm that they believed me. I couldn't get them to not believe me that I knew Giselle.
All right.
The fun you can have with sports these days.
One last thing real quick before we go. We still got a couple of minutes. Could the Buffalo Bills be in trouble depending upon the extent of Josh Allen's bad elbow?
Yes, they could be in trouble. I mean, it's funny, huh, Tim? They were sitting on top of the world 2 or 3 weeks ago, capable of beating anybody, but now when you have an injury to a player like that, a franchise guy, Josh Allen, and that, you know, it's funny, isn't it, Tim and Rick, that division is probably the best in all of the NFL. Every single team, including the Patriots, has a winning record.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And, it's crazy. You don't see that in any other division, and all of those teams, the Jets have radically improved, of course, dramatically improved. The Patriots have sort of getting there. Their offense was ferocious yesterday with the 9 sacks. You know, the Dolphins are certainly up a level right now the way they're playing. I guess there was a mistake about their quarterback not being able to throw the ball long because he's been tremendous all year. So then you got the Bills. So all of those teams have had, you know, positive, you know, plus records, and it's a heck of a division. You look at it for the Patriots, you hope the Patriots, you know, from our standpoint, can make the playoffs. But that's a tough division to get through.
Yeah, Mike, you know, we look at the standings in the AFC East, and it's just a total flip of what it has been for basically the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah, it's a total flip. And I think it's great when you have all those teams with winning records because every head-to-head matchup is so important. You know, and the Patriots will find that out after their bye week because they have the Jets at home.
All right, Mike, your homework assignment is I want to know what Michelle's next modeling job is and where it's going, not Michelle, but
Giselle.
I want to know, Michelle, where'd that come from?
How quickly you forget. Because they are getting divorced, how quickly you forget.
Isn't that the truth?
By the way, one final one. How about Tom Brady, Tim and Rick, watching that game yesterday, in 35 seconds
yep.
he drove his team
yep.
60 yards.
Yep.
For the winning score, after it looked like they were dead in the water.
With no timeouts.
No timeouts, 44 seconds on the clock. He drove him in for the winning score with 9 seconds to spare. So, you know, I know he didn't have a great game, but he did throw for 280 yards. And he's got 10 touchdown passes this year and only one interception. He's not been that bad. They don't have the weapons they've had a couple of years ago when they won it all.
Well, what I told Tim, he's pretty darn good. And I don't know if you guys agree with this, Tim. I don't know if you agree with it or not, but what I saw yesterday was Brady not getting flustered or at least not demonstrating it when these guys were dropping passes. I think there were like 6 drop passes. But instead, he kept putting it right between the numbers on every one of those guys until finally they had to catch it.
Right, right. It was just a brilliantly executed drive, use of the clock by Brady. And there's nobody in the world on the history of the NFL that I would want. If you needed a 60-yard drive with 40, there's no one in the world, I think, that I would want, all the years I've watched football, other than Brady. I mean, he's the number one guy, I think, in a situation like that. That's what makes him still, at age 165, the best in football.
Hey, Mike, does he lead that drive if he's still dealing with the divorce from Giselle?
I don't know. I don't know.
His mind was totally free, totally uncluttered. You know, he just went out there and went boom, 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 boom. Thank you very much. That's another win.
Well, you know, the question for another day, not for tonight, obviously, because we're running out of time, is that how much longer will he play now because his life is uncluttered? That's the major question.
I saw tonight he said he's playing next year.
That, I wouldn't doubt that at all. I would not doubt that at all.
Wow. Okay, well, I want Christian Vasquez back. Maybe we'll get Brady back, too. Who knows?
And you know what? I want Robin Williams back.
Why is he thinking about, why does he want to come back here?
Yeah, Rick, we want Rick, right now we want Robert Williams back.
Well, okay, let's start with that, yeah.
Alleviate that defensive problem.
Something that hopefully is really attainable. Hey, Mike, you've done good in Gary's slot. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you guys having that much faith in me.
All right, we'll do it again. Let's see, there's no holiday next week, right? Monday is, okay, we're good.
I don't think so. No.
All right, we'll talk to you then, Mike. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All right, be well. Appreciate it. Okay, that's Mike Grenier, sports journalist, and I don't know. It's the little kid inside of us. The sports thing just never dies, does it, Tim?
No, there's always a new story every single day.
And the thing is, too, with sports, there's always a tomorrow. It may not be in this year's standings, but there's always a tomorrow. All right, Coach.
Yep.
We'll talk to you later.
All righty, Rick. We'll talk to you during the week.
Thank you, Tim. Be well.
You too.
All right, that's Tim Kearns, our MSO sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Proposky is our engineer, and of course, Bill Newell, sort of our general everything here. He's taking care of business with tons of interviews that we're going to have up prior to the round two of the MIAA football tournament, among other things as well. So appreciate all these guys. It's great. Thank you for joining us. Please keep doing it. If you need to get hold of us, please do so at msonewsports@gmail.com. That's msonewsports@gmail.com. So on behalf of all those guys, I'm Rick Moore. Take care, be well, and do the right thing.